Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Wine for Bet Street. In case you're not familiar with this series, Debbie, aka HV Wine Goddess, and myself, once a month, which takes place on the third Monday of every month, we take the next letter of the day and we discuss a specific wine variety or a wine region that starts with that letter. So this episode is letter of the day is E, and it stands for Etna, basically because we couldn't find a grape varietal that starts with the letter E. But anyway, hope you enjoy the episode, and if you do, please head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating so that others can find us. And if you're not listening on iTunes, because I know a whole bunch of people do not like the new update, please give us a rating on whatever podcast app you are listening to. So thanks a lot and enjoy Wine for Bet Street. E is for Etna.
How are you?
I am doing great. How are you?
I am good. I am good. It's been, as we said, it's been a stressful week. And I have to admit, I have a whole bunch of people, we're going to start off sad, but I have a whole bunch of people who were so kind that were sending me messages to ask me if I was okay and, asking me if, you know, our vines were okay and our winery were okay. And it amazes me, you know, it's so sweet, but we're 4 hours south. So we are good. But thank you to everybody who sent me messages, sent me text messages, emails, Twitter, all that stuff to ask. We are safe. But I do also want to say that Mike and I, Dracena Wines, we are joining alliances with Paso Wine Alliance. And for the month of October, any bottle that we sell, from one bottle to whatever it is, we're actually going to donate $4 of that sale to the Paso Wine Alliance, who will then send the money that is accumulated from, I think there's like 30 wineries in Paso that are joining in.
Great.
And so, you know, California Wine Strong, we're one wine country. And so if you're thinking of buying our wine, now's a good time, you know, get yourself the award-winning wine and help us help those in need. But on the good side, it seems like the fires are going, they're getting them under control. People are back in Calistoga. People are allowed back in many parts of Napa and Sonoma. So thank you, first responders. And, you know, our hearts go out to everybody who has been affected by these fires.
Yeah, they do. It's devastating. It's heartbreaking. But, you know, the wine community, you know, bonds together. And we help each other.
Yes, yes.
Times of
need. I love the hashtag California Wine Strong. You know, we do. It really is. And you know what? We're resilient. They will come back and they will be stronger and better than ever. I kind of think of the Steve, this Million Dollar Man. We can rebuild. We will.
And you know what? Rebuild and replant.
Yeah. Are we ready for Wine for Bet Street?
We are. Let it roll.
Talking about Etna, because we could not find any grape varietals that we could get a bottle of.
Yeah,
That started with the letter E.
And I went into the store, and there was only, I had one choice.
Yeah. Yep. I only had one choice of Aetna also. Although I must say, I was very disappointed that we couldn't do Elvira, which is a great varietal. I really did want to do Elvira because it was October, and I thought it would have been so awesome to have Elvira right before Halloween.
I'm going to have to find a long black wig.
Yes. Elvira. Yes.
And Elvira is a Native American grape.
Yes, it is. And I think it would have been cool to kind of talk about that grape varietal, but just nowhere can I find it. Nowhere. But so why don't you introduce yourself to our new people?
I am Debbie Giaquindo. I am the Hudson Valley Wine Goddess. I'm a wine writer, wine blogger, and I am also an author of Tapping the Hudson Valley, which is a book on day trips and weekend itineraries visiting all the craft beverage producers and the sites along the way in the Hudson Valley. I think that's it.
It's hard to keep track of everything.
I know. I'm lucky I know where I am.
Right? Well, I am Lori, and I am a co-owner with my husband, Michael, of Dracena Wines, and we produce award-winning Cabernet Franc out of Paso Robles. We are the founders of the nationally recognized holiday Cab Franc Day, and our newest release came out on October 1st, and we are excited about this vintage, but even more excited that in March, we are going to be releasing our very first rosé, which will be a rosé of Syrah, also out of Paso Robles. And I think that's pretty much it that I'll talk about tonight for us. So, Aetna, easy, hard for you to find information about?
No, actually, it was pretty interesting. I found on the whole evolution of what is now Mount Aetna Wines. It wasn't as hard as I thought, but it was interesting. I mean, I can't pronounce a lot of things, but
ding ding ding, yes.
You know, but it was good, and I have to say, so was the wine. But
I know. It, I think also compared to, our letter of the day, D for Dolcetto, because that was a tough one to find information about. This had a lot more information out there about, so it was really an interesting, read for me, I guess, you know. Where at Dolcetto, I was like, oh my God, I've got a paragraph here, and then this person is saying exactly the same thing, and this person is saying exactly the same thing. There was a lot more information out there for Aetna. But yeah, so I'm going to start off with the general characteristics of.
Okay, then I'll go into the history.
And then you do the history. Sound good?
Okay, sounds good.
All right, good. So locally, Mount Aetna is actually called Mangiabello. Yes, I just like that word.
That.
I like it.
I didn't know that.
And Mount Aetna is Europe's largest and most active volcano, and it's frequently erupting. Like, people go there to see the eruption, and it's often got the large amounts of lava flows. But what I found interesting is as much as it erupts and as much as the lava goes flowing, it really doesn't pose that big of a danger to the people who are living below, which I guess is why they live there, because if there was a lot of danger, I'm guessing they wouldn't be there. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And with this, it has actually become one of Italy's most hottest wine regions. Like, it is an up-and-coming wine region. Ah! I didn't even get that till you laughed. Yeah! Ba-dum-bump, right?
Yep.
Ah! Look at that. Okay. Anyway, the primary wine-producing zone at the slopes of Mount Aetna are huge. It elevates from like 2,000 to 6,500 feet above sea level, and it actually has the claim of being the highest commercial vineyards in the world. So I guess you get a nosebleed if you're up there at the 6,500, because that's pretty darn high.
Pretty thin oxygen up there.
Yeah. And, you know, and because they're so steep that when they're harvesting, you're not getting mechanical harvesting up there, you know. So these are people picking. So they've got to be exhausted from just trying, you know, I'm envisioning them trying to, you know, like this, trying to stay straight up on the right. on the slopes. But it does pose, you know, some serious problems for the vintners. The steeply sloped terraces are very difficult to manage, so most has to be done by hand harvest, which I'm a fan of hand harvesting. I think that
I think it's TLC involved, you know, as far as the grapes and how they're handled and the quality. But that's my right. personal opinion.
And I think that when you mechanically harvest, like you said, there's more damage done to the fruit. So if your winery is right there, it's not really that big of a deal, you know, because it's going from the vineyard right to the winery and you're going to go into the processing of the fruit. But I don't think they're going from 6,500 square feet down to a winery on a rather quick basis. So, no. You know, but with that being said, go back to what you said. I'm a fan of this wine. Woo! I'm happy with this wine.
We'll get into that.
Yeah.
But I was impressed.
Yes. So again, it's mostly hand harvested, which is very time consuming and actually rather expensive, which again goes back to, I was surprised at the price point of the wine, knowing how difficult it is to harvest these wines. Etna's soil, Mount Etna soil, is rich with volcanic nutrients. So they're very, you know, grapes love volcanic soil. There's a lot of nutrients in there. The environment or the climate is considered a hot Mediterranean climate. So this, it's a hot sun while the warm Mediterranean breezes are there. And so it's warm during the day, cooler at night with the breezes. So we get those nice, you know, long hang times, that diurnal shift that we like so much for fruit. Again, there's actually a high diurnal shift, day temperature to night temperature, not as much as Paso, but there is quite a bit of temperature change. And this really is beneficial to the grapes. What it does is allow the grapes to hang on the vine a little bit longer and gets them to ripen a little bit slower, which allows them to bring in more flavors without over-ripening and without giving you, you know, the bricks is a little bit slower to get up and you get more complexity in these wines. What else? Some of the vines, this was, I thought was pretty cool, that some of the vines in Mount Etna are actually over 200 years old. Mm-hmm. And many of them are over 100 years old. So we're talking some old vines there. And the soil that is so, you know, volcanic contains high concentrations of sand and is a combination that all the nutrients that are in there, it's highly resistant to phylloxera. Yeah. So that's why they're 200 years old, is because when the whole phylloxera thing came in, you know, the phylloxera didn't like that sand, didn't like that volcanic stuff, and didn't go there. Yeah. Oh,
the vines in Etna were not affected when phylloxera went right through, Europe.
Right. So it was really, you know, it's amazing what the soil saved them.
Yeah.
You know,
and they were exporting, I believe, the wines to like England and Europe and stuff because they were the only surviving ones.
Right. So if you are going to drink an Etna wine, basically you are looking at dry red and white blends. We don't see, in Etna, we don't see varietals. We see blends. And there's a few, what they, rosados. So there's a few rosés. But it's big time red is really what they're predominantly known for. By regulation, they must have a minimum of 80% Nerello Mascalize. How's that? Mascalize.
Yeah.
All right. So Nerello Mascalize. And it's, you know, it's a very little known grape varietal, and it's actually only produced in the Mount Etna region. So it is indigenous to the Mount Etna region, and it is only there. It's known for its deeply colored, thick-skinned variety. It's a variety that's thick-skinned, and it gives you some gritty tannins, but it's got a vibrant acidity. Okay, and that is going to be, like I said, 80% must be that grape varietal. The other grape that is in these red blends is Nerello Cappuccio. The Nerello Cappuccio must comprise at least 10%, but no more than 20% of the total wine. And then they are actually allowed to use white grapes to make up the difference, to get to that 100%. And the Nerello Cappuccio contributes spicy aromas, red berry flavors, and perhaps a touch, what they say, the elegance of the red. Now, I have a white, so I don't know.
I have a white too, so.
So the Etna Bianco, which is their white, the wines must be a minimum of 60% Caracante, which is, again, a very little-known grape varietal that is indigenous to the Mount Etna region. And 40% of the blend can consist of other authorized local wine varieties. And the other wine that pretty much is in the Bianco is Caracante. And so these are actually in the highest. Caracante is mostly in the highest zones of the Etna DOC. And they're known to be, Caracante is known to be lean, crisp, and acidic. And it does provide for more full-bodied and creamier wines than more fruit. So like you're getting the body, and then the fruit kind of sneaks up on you on the end. And when we get to the wines, I'll talk more about that. So
I'm pretty excited about these wines because this is the first time I've had a Mount Etna wine.
Me too. Me too.
And, yeah, I was like, wow. But we'll get into that. See, we're so excited about our wine.
Right. But I kind of think it'd be cool to be there when it, you know, when it erupted, but
it would be really cool, but it would be like, okay, how long do we have to get off the island or out of harm's way?
Right, right. But there's other pictures all over the web of people who are there and they are, you know, like hiking it so that they're close enough to the lava. I mean,
right.
I'm pretty brave. I don't know if I do that, but that's pretty cool. That's so dangerous, but it's beautiful in its own
it
right.
It is kind of cool. I did that in Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
So that is my general characteristics of Mount Etna wines.
Well, that was great. Mount Etna DOC, it's situated, okay, so you have Sicily, and it's situated on the northeast and south slopes of the Etna volcano. And Mount Etna is a province of Catania.
Okay.
That has been farmed since ancient times, and the Greeks have their hands in everything. and I can say that because my mother-in-law is Greek.
There you go.
Right off the boat. But the Greeks conquered the region in 729 BC, and they planted vineyards and made wine. So the history of the wine region, really, it really goes far, far back. And poet Theocritus wrote about the vineyards on the slopes of Mount Etna in the 3rd century BC. So in the 20th century, fast forward, The wars and poverty kept a lot of people away from investing in Mount Etna. And even though, and I can get rid of the PowerPoint so you can see me. So even people don't want to stare at a PowerPoint while I sit here and talk. So even though mainland Italy was thriving and having a renaissance, you know, in the 70s, Mount Etna, it was very depressed. And they did receive DOC status in 1968, but it really wasn't producing much wines. And 30 years ago, there were only 5 producers in the Mount Etna region.
5?
5.
Wow.
They really owe a lot of the resurgence to a guy named Giuseppe Bentani. And he began producing it. Oh, let me back up. A lot of people also stayed away because, as you said, everything erupted when the volcano erupted. It did devastate, you know, a lot of people's, you know, lives and vineyards. And so people just didn't come back. They had left.
Oh, okay.
That's why in the 70s, yeah. But, yeah, so... And people have just started, you know, we're just starting to come back. But this guy, Giuseppe Bentani, had started producing wines in the 90s, early 90s. And then he started buying up land and planting. And it's from him that the resurgence started to come into the Etna region. So Etna's primary wine producing zones, they rise up to about 3,500 feet and higher. And like you said, it's the highest commercial vineyards in the world. Which is kind of neat because usually Chile, I always hear they say how high their vineyards are, but Mount Etna's got them beat.
So I was listening to a podcast while I was walking around the park yesterday, and I wouldn't say what podcast, I wouldn't say anything, but they were talking about Chilean wines and how it's the highest elevation, and I'm like,
they need to come to Wine for Bet Street.
Yes, they need to learn on Wine for Bet Street.
That's
it's
right.
Very high, but
not high enough. So the volcanic nutrients, once again, it's great for growing grapes. And they benefit from the hot sun and the warm breezes, and it extends the growing season. And there's considerable variation between the day and the nighttime temperatures at these high elevations, which really works well with the grapes. So it not only facilitates the berry growth, but promotes complexity in the grape juice flavors, which gives you a wine with complexity. You touched on the soil, which is the concentration of sand, and that's why Fluoroxifer didn't decimate their vineyards in the 1800s, and also happened again, I think, in another time as well. But a lot of the grapevines are over a century years old, some 200 years. And the 200-year ones are kind of like gnarly and fragile, but they produce some amazing, amazing wine. They're kind of like the bushes with the – do you ever see them? I've seen them in California where there are bushes. They're not sometimes vines, and they get all gnarly and scraggly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So and you touch – I'm not going to retouch on some of the stuff that you touched on with the blends and everything because I had those too. And that's pretty much it. As far as the history, I mean, it is what it is today. I know there's some families, I was reading about this one woman, her family was from Etna and they had left, because it was, you know, so poor and poverty. And, she actually came back and started to farm the land that her family once, farmed and it's growing. Crops. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's really, you know, and there's a lot of people from, the mainland, like in Tuscany and Chianti and those in Barolo that are starting to purchase property down there. Oh, and one thing I thought was interesting, the reds, they say, are like some of them are like a fine Barolo.
Oh.
Yeah, in some of my reading. But the reds are drink now reds. They're not ones right. to sell them, but some of them, the finesse and everything are like a nice Barolo.
Oh.
Well, maybe one of them's got reds. We don't know.
Yeah. Maybe I'll have to head back to the store and pick up the one red that I could have gotten. I have to admit, when we decided to do Aetna, I thought there'd be more choice, but I only had one red or one white to choose from. So
I didn't have a choice.
I got a little lucky, I guess. But we did pick two different ones, so that is good.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good. Which brings me to, here is my wine. Okay. So this is a Murgo Etna Bianco. Okay. And it is, here's the little picture of the back to show you the little Sicily and stuff. And it is actually 12.5% alcohol, which in my world is deadly because that means I can drink this whole bottle.
Yeah. Mine's 13%.
So, and you know, I actually don't know what the regulation is if you are out of the country, you know, like the 1%, you know, we can have a 1% variation. Right. If you're over 14.5%, if you're under. So I don't know if that's the same here. Murgo. What you got there? Let's see yours. Did I miss yours?
I have a Ferriato.
Let's see.
2016.
Okay.
All right. My back isn't as nice as yours. My back is little in English.
Does it tell a little story?
I don't know. It says just about the Mount Etna wines.
Oh. Mine is?
Bush vines tend to the purest classical Greek dish. Tradition. They're just some of the reasons why Caronte and Cataranto can produce such a bright white wine so far south.
So mine is actually the importer's label. So this is a label. I don't know if it's on top of another label, but this is an importer label. This is all from the importer.
No, mine's not. And I have to tell you, when I was researching this wine, I was really impressed with their website.
Were you?
I really was.
That's a first one for a long time since we've been out of the country drinking wine. Yeah. I found quite a bit on them, but their website was nice. It had quite a bit of information about them. Do you want to go first or you want me to go first about the winery?
Oh, I can go.
Okay, go ahead.
Whatever you want.
Go ahead.
Okay.
That just means I can drink right now. So we're good.
So this is, this winery is actually owned by a family. It is owned by, there he is. By Salvatore Di Gaetano. And he's a businessman who's following his dreams of owning, obviously, a winery in his homeland. And he now, his daughter runs it with him and his wife and the daughter's husband. So their original vineyards, they have, I think it's like 4 or 5 vineyards all throughout Sicily.
Oh, okay.
So they have, and they have other holdings in other places. And they have a video and they take the grapes by boat. It was kind of cool.
Oh.
So
I'm going to have to check out their website because I think maybe a Pursue Your Passion guest blog post might be.
Maybe. I'll put the link up when I'm done.
Okay.
I gotta go find the website. But so the original vineyards are in the countryside of Trapani, and then they started investing. That's the one part of Sicily. And then they started investing in Etna and the Aegean Islands. So they manage 6 vineyards in all. And they're certified organic. And the process of converting the company's vineyards back to organic production was completed in 2012. And the company was, and they were awarded a BioAgra certificate of conformity to the European regulation 834/07/CE concerning the production of organic agriculture, and then they were given the DNV with certification concerning vegan production.
Oh, okay.
So they're pretty high tech.
Yeah.
In 2004, they received an ISO 14001 certification, which guarantees that most of the packing materials used are recyclables, from the glass bottles to the paper for the labels to the cardboard boxes and everything. There's like no waste.
Hmm.
So I was really
impressed. Kudos to them.
Yes. So the name for, I probably am not even pronouncing this correctly, Ferriato takes its origins from the rural material culture of Western Sicily, where the term was used to indicate the area close to the main house.
Oh.
So it's well-defined and protected area where the most valuable crops are planted. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And it's an Italian term meaning enclosed, which relates to close, C-L-O-S, which is referenced in French estates.
Yes. Yes.
So a lot of history just in this wine. So Etna challenged the family to engage with mountain viticulture because that was, you know, new to them, and to understand the unique qualities and to discover, you know, the qualities in relation to the terroir, the volcanic soils. So it was, and they produced some pretty good wine. I mean, I'm pretty impressed with this.
Mine is also a blend. Mine is actually 70% Cattercante and 30% Cattarato. It was fermented and aged in stainless steel. That's what gives it its crisp acidity, which I'm all about. Bring on the acidity. Yeah. I'm a happy camper. You know, when I talk about wine, I talk about, you know, what we're doing with us, with our rosé and stuff. I'm like, I'm an acid head. I am making an acid head wine. So, you know, this has a nice crisp acidity with this freshness. But it's kind of intriguing to me because it's got the acidity that I like, but it's got a bigger mouthfeel than what I'm used to having when I have such an acidic wine. Usually, you know, you think of a crisp Sauvignon Blanc, a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, where it's crisp, and then, you know, there's just, and not in a bad way because I like it, you know, it's light on your tongue. This is crisp, but it actually has a mouthfeel, it actually coats your tongue. And I think that's the complexity, I think that's the terroir that's bringing it that way. 4,000 cases of this was made. So, I think they're a rather high producer. I did not know this when I purchased it because, like I said, it was my only white choice, but it actually did receive a 90 in Wine Spectator. This vintage received a 90 in Wine Spectator.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So they feel, although it's regulated, so whatever, they feel the higher acidity, the Cattercante grapes balances the Cattarato grapes, which provides the complexity. And, you know, it is what it is, but I think it is a rather complex wine.
Mine too.
Yeah. I paid $14.99 for mine. And it's currently on sale for $11.99. So when I was looking up the winery, you know, you do Wine Searcher and you could see the prices across the board, and it ranges from $11.99 to $17.99. So I did not pay the highest amount for it, but it is now on sale. So I kind of, you know, that pizza commercial, you did not get a good pizza deal, rip the number one dad off.
Mine was closer to $20.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, I got mine in North Jersey, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, we are expensive here, you know. Whatever. So
But I'm loving the acid. but it's not too acidy.
No.
Where you wake up with that acid mouth in the morning.
Right. It's not sucking on a lemon. It's not sucking on a lemon.
No. And the lime. I really like the lime and the minerality of it.
Yes. I have a lot of minerality also. But I want to just go back because this guy, I should probably give him more respect, but this guy, he's like some big wig, like in Italy. And, I was kind of impressed with his, dossier or resume. Yes. So I'm going to read this because I can't pronounce three quarters of the things that it is. So if I'm not looking at it, I'm going to get it wrong. But this is directly from their website. Okay. The Baron, the Baron Emmanuel Scamacca, del Murgo. So Emmanuel Scamacca del Murgo had a long career as a diplomatic and having been Italian ambassador in important embassies as the Holy See, Brussels, Moscow, and Assistant Secretary of the Estate at Foreign Affairs. That's, I don't know what all that means, but sounds pretty impressive to me. Okay. So the Murgo family has been producing wines from the southeastern slopes of Mount Etna since 1980. So they've been around for a while. But the Murgo estate was actually founded in 1850. And the current, which confused me, the current Baron Emmanuel Scamacca del Murgo, I don't know what that means, the current. I mean, I know it means he's the guy who's alive now, but...
It sounds like something out of a movie that you watch, as they say all that.
Yeah, like
you're waiting for the 10th or the 3rd or the 4th.
Well, I was thinking of, like, Game of Thrones when they go through Daenerys's Queen of the This and, you know, Mother of Dragon and Freer of the Slaves and blah, 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 blah.
I didn't watch it.
Oh, you're missing out. But that's a whole other story. So the current Baron Emmanuel Scamacca del Murgo was the patriarch responsible for bringing the estate into the modern age. He had sons, Michele, which I'm guessing is Michael, Pietro, Peter, and Matteo, Matt. Handcrafts, mesmerizing Bianco, and they are considered one of the finest winemakers in the Appalachian.
Wow.
Right? So pretty snazzy stuff here.
Got a lot of big words there.
I know.
You're a copywriter.
And then, this is directly from their site, so it's obviously an Italian who's writing it, so the grammar is not quite there. But highly impressive resume, right? Not that I know what any of it means, but highly impressive. And I thought this was funny. Following destocking. We call it harvesting, right? They are destocking. The fruit is macerated in a climate-controlled stainless steel vat for 15 hours. So 15 hours. The wine is gently pressed and undergo static decantation for 1 to 2 days. So that's our maceration and cold, cold fermentation. And they ferment till completely dry. And then the wine is blended and aged for a minimum of 5 months in stainless steel. And then they allow it to age for 2 months in bottle. So to get rid of bottle shock is 2 months before they release. Their vineyard is 500 meters above sea level. So that's pretty low on the Etna. And it's found on the eastern slopes below, and I don't know what this is, Zafferana Etnia. But it's a panoramic view. That's what they say.
Sounds pretty.
Okay. And then they have their own main access to their street, to their winery. And they have their own access to their own craters.
Wow. Now that would be cool to see.
Right? I'm like, yeah, I want to go there. So they actually do accept visitors, which is interesting because I'm not sure how many wineries there actually accept visitors. But they do accept visitors. They have about 24th, I don't know, because I didn't understand what this was. It said 24.5 hectares. I think it's 24.5. I think they put a comma instead of a decimal point. So 24 acres, and they are part of the DOC. So some big wig governmental guy is what I'm guessing started this winery. And again, you know, he decided he wanted to pursue his passion, get out of politics and make wine.
There you go. I did find us my spec sheet here.
Oh, okay.
But it really doesn't tell me that much. Their grapes are from the northeastern side of the volcano, 720 meters above sea level.
Okay. So not far from Murgo here.
Yeah. They do a soft pressing and fermentation in controlled temperature, 3 months thoroughly on the lees in stainless steel tanks, with daily shaking, and it matures in the bottle for 2 months. The vintage production is around 25,000 bottles. So that's like,
oh my goodness. I've got a little league guy here.
25,000 divided by 12 is 2,000 cases.
Never mind. I've got a big league guy.
25,000 bottles.
Oh, okay. This is 4,000. Oh, you know what? No, this is 4,000 cases.
Okay. So mine's 2,000 cases.
Okay.
So, yeah, I get confused. A lot of times what I find when I was in France and I asked how much they produced, they told me bottles.
Like, who's counting? Who's counting? So what are you getting in this? Here's mine in glass.
Here's my glass.
Okay, so
mine's a little darker.
Yeah, yours is a little. I think I just have a floodlight on over it, though.
Okay. So maybe I can hear.
Yeah. So what are you getting?
So I get white flowers on the nose.
I get
lime. I get like hints of like fresh lime.
I get lime. I get a little honeysuckle. If I was blindfolded, I would go Sauvignon Blanc.
Would you?
I would. Not often. I mean, the taste is just more full palate, but like, it's so refreshing.
There is an aroma that I can't identify, but it reminds me of a smell of my childhood when I lived in Rochelle, like out playing, like. White flowers. It was some type of flower.
Right. I don't know. There's a little honey in mine. A little honey. Definitely lime. But it's... I like it. I'm just getting, you know, whatever. I am a fan.
I really like it. Like, when I was making dinner tonight, I have a plethora of hot peppers.
I saw.
So I don't know what to do with them. So
you're bringing them on Friday. That's what you're doing.
I made jalapeno popper mac and cheese.
Mm.
And I'm like, there is no way this wine's going to go with it. But it did.
Did it really?
The chilies weren't that hot. And I was really surprised. So maybe there is a little bit of honey in here because with that. But the jalapenos weren't that hot, uh-huh. But I was impressed. I was like, wow. I mean, and I can get to the food pairings, you know, it's Italy, you deal with pasta.
Right.
But, you know, but mostly it's like pasta with fish and things like that. But it paired well with the jalapeno popper and mac and cheese.
Which, it is a great intro, so why don't you do the food pairings?
Sure. Sure. So, let's see here. So the food pairing. So, like I said, like fish. Mount Etna, they like their fish because they're coastal. They're, you know, they're on the water. And I do have a PowerPoint to go with this. So, but the fish is like mackerel, sardine.
Yeah. Yes, that is.
It's not really fish I eat, but that's okay. You know.
New.
But, you know, to each their own. You know, people like.
It's what they grow up with. I would not, because fish literally make me nauseous. When we were in Venice, I was not a happy camper. but, yes. But, you know what? If you grow up with it, that's what you like. That's what you know.
You know, and if that's what you like. But, so, there's, you know, like Italian, you know, you're going to get your tomatoes, your peppers, your eggplants, cheeses made with sheep's and cow milk. Like, so the majority of the protein is oily fish, like sardines and mackerel.
Right.
You know, they do, obviously, chicken, beef, and pork, too. So some of the dishes that I put up, let's see, you know, this is pasta and,
that's a pesto.
My dish that I lost had the dish in it and I couldn't find where I found the dish. So,
well, you know what? I bet you pesto would go well.
Yeah. I don't know. What did I do?
No, you might need a little kick. I'm not, now that I'm like thinking about it, I think a little kick, this can stand up to it because it's got enough body to it.
It really did. I was really surprised. I was like, I wasn't sure, but maybe it's the body. And like I said, these jalapenos were not hot.
Right.
So another thing I was reading was fried tuna croquettes made with ricotta, pine nuts, potato, lemon, breadcrumbs, capers, and mint. What I found, too, was ricotta cheese was in lots of stuff.
I wonder if oh, that looks pretty. That's eggplant? I don't eat that either.
You don't eat that either?
No. Way too... No. Mike has such difficulty with preparing meals for me. No, I don't like eggplant. Okay. But that's pretty.
Yeah, very nice. I had when my daughter was young, she got hives from eggplant. She was at my in-laws and came home. And then as years go by, I couldn't remember who was allergic to eggplant. And then she went out and had eggplant and got hives. I said, you're the child.
You're the one. I can see eggplant. Oh, look at that.
So this is a baked pasta with like egg and cheese and peas. It's got a name. It's called.
All right, I'm gonna.
Pasta in casita. It contains a meat sauce, cheese, sausage, hard-boiled eggs, eggplant or peas, and it's baked.
It looks
pretty good. I would like that.
It does look good, except for the fact that it's circular pasta, which makes me think Chef Boyardee.
Some of it's not. That just happens to be the pasta.
Right.
I think I did, but it. Different types of pasta.
That looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, and these are rice balls.
Yummy.
In the rice balls, there's anything from meat to mozzarella to peas. They're big on peas.
Peas. I'll take all the peas. So whenever I order, you know, we have a favorite restaurant here, and we go in, and my order is penne and vodka sauce.
Uh-huh.
And they have peas in their penne and vodka sauce. So when I place the order, I'm always like, all right, give me the penne and vodka sauce with extra peas. And they're always like, all right, well, you know, nobody else wants the peas, so you can have them all for the night. And I'm like, woohoo! And then I get, you know.
I grew peas this year.
Did you?
I did. They were really good. Oh, fresh peas, you peel them from the pot and just pop them in
your
mouth.
Oh, yummy, yum, yum.
They're awesome. So
okay.
Here's the fish. I think this is a mackerel.
All right.
And here's seafood. They do octopus. And I believe that this is like some type of farro, you know, grain.
Ugh.
And mussels and clams. More pasta with basil, tomatoes.
And my there you go. Cannoli, baby.
You know, gotta end well, you know.
Oh, my God. You know what? Absolutely. Oh, my God. This would be phenomenal with cannoli.
Yes. I can taste that cannoli, man. I want that.
So can I. Oh, yum. Yum,
so
yum,
that's,
yum.
That's pretty much, you know, they also have like in Sicily, which isn't, you know, it's the island in general. They have like a whole thing on Sicily street food, which is really kind of cool, which I found really interesting. But, you know, it wasn't specific to the Mount Etna region. So
right.
I didn't want
to. Oh, cannoli. Oh, my God. I can go for cannoli right now.
I could too, man. Doesn't that look good?
It really does. It really does.
Oh, I could taste it.
Yeah. I might have to go to Sorrento's Bakery later in Lodi and get me some cannoli. All right. Well, that is...
I find this very easy drinking.
Yes. And that's why I said it's 12.5% alcohol. So it's kind of... It's a troublemaker because...
Yeah, mine's 13.
You can...
So mine's halfway done now.
Yeah, so is mine. So is mine. But whatever, it's Monday. It's Wine for Bet Street.
That's right.
There we go. It's all in the need for you know, education, you know.
That's right.
Sláinte.
Yeah.
You know.
But it's really, I love being introduced to new wines.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this is just like, I almost texted you when I opened it and had a sip and said, oh my God, this is fantastic. But I'm like, no, it's got to wait till Wine for Bet Street.
Yeah, now, like, yeah, already popped the cork.
So blown away.
Yeah.
I really was.
I was shocked. I mean, I didn't really know what to expect. I was pleasantly surprised. You know, I really had no clue what to expect. And I purchased the bottle actually when I bought the Dolcetto. Mm-hmm. And we decided we couldn't come up with the Elvira or that other grape, the Elfernishicha, whatever, I can't pronounce. I just got the Etna also. So I've had it for a while, but I procrastinated and didn't look up what it had until this weekend. So when I popped it this afternoon, I was like, yeah, this is good. This might be another bottle. And now that I know it's on sale, there's probably another.
Really go down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to stop next time I'm traveling in North Jersey.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. But. So I have the 5 quick facts that we always end our episodes with. So I have the 5 fast facts of the Etna wine region. And our first fact is the size of the vineyards. So the vineyard surface is about 31 plus 100 hectares, which comes out to be about 7,800 acres. And then there is an actual DOC region, which is obviously going to be much smaller. So the DOC is about 656 hectares, which is about 1,600 acres. And their annual production is 78,500 hectoliters, which is 2 million plus gallons. It's 60 gallons in a barrel, but that was way too much math for me to do. And there wasn't room on the slide for it. So divide that by 60 and you're going to get how many barrels you got. Okay. And then there's about 50 cases in a barrel. So that is a lot of math, but take that number, 60 gallons per barrel and then 50 cases per barrel. I'm sorry, 25 cases per barrel. Etna wine region fact number 2, we have 6 DOCs and some of the DOCs have specific regulations. So we have the Etna Rosso, which is a minimum of the Nerello Mascalese and a maximum of 20% Cappuccio. Etna Rosso Reserva, which I believe has the same regulations of what the grape varieties are, but now you have to have 4 years aged and at least 1 year in wood. So I was like blown away by that. Like, wow. 4 years, you know, that's for, you know, that's pretty impressive.
But it doesn't need to be 4 years in wood. It just needs to be aged 4 years.
Right, which I kind of think is interesting. So are they taking it in 1 year in wood, putting it in a bottle, and then holding it for 4 years? Like, what is it aging in?
I don't know.
You know, I thought that was a little kind of interesting. Etna Bianco needs to be, as we said, minimum 60% Chetarcante. In order to be a superior, it needs to be 80% Chetarcante, and it must be from the, I don't know if it's Milo or Milo. And then you have the Etna Rosato and Etna Spumante. And all I saw, I'm not going to lie, I saw Etna Spumante, and I'm like, ooh, saber possibility.
You're going to be savoring Friday night.
Woo! Yeah. I'm going to have to pack my little glove.
Okay,
so wine fact number 3. The soil is volcanic and is very rich in minerals. It is formed from the disintegration of the lava. And there's lots of different ages and eruption materials in there. So you got lava, ash, and sand. And these all come together to create a very nutrient-rich soil that includes iron, copper, phosphorus, and magnesium. So very, very happy vines in there. Wine fact number 4. Etna wines are mostly blends. And I'm not going to read that again because we've gone over it 3 times now. But you are expecting you are expecting dry red and dry white wines. And number 5, there's my volcanic eruption picture. The region was the first to be granted in DOC status in Sicily in 1968. You had mentioned that. And it is located near Mount Etna, which is still the active volcano. And the vineyards are mostly on its northern Rendazzo and southern slopes, which is Santa Maria de Locodia. I don't know how to say that. But that is the wine Etna wine region's Fast 5 Facts.
Very nice.
So there we have it. So I have to say,
I'm telling you, hats off to Etna.
I concur.
You know,
I wish I could have a chance to find other Etna wines and see if, you know, if we got lucky with these or, you know, or if that is the consistency. Yeah.
See what you know, with the indigenous red varieties.
Yeah.
See what they're like. Because I'm impressed with this. I would buy it again. I would, you know, and I think it's not even, it's an all year round. You just have some wine, some white, you think immediately of just summer.
Right.
But this is all year round white.
Yes. And I think that goes to the full bodiness of it.
Yeah.
That goes to the
because
full bodiness.
Because it's definitely something you can drink on a hot summer's day, and it's something you can drink and, you know, by your fireplace in the wintertime.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and I think it goes with a variety of foods.
I agree. And there's going to be another glass being filled soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, mine too.
So next month.
Gotcha. F is for?
Ferment. I don't know really how to say it.
Ferment.
Ferment.
F-E-R-M-E-N-T. It's a Hungarian grape. Grown, obviously, in Hungary. Hungary, and I was telling Lori this before when we were chatting, Hungarian wine holds into my heart because my family's from Hungary, my grandfather, and we own vineyards in the Tapacola region of Hungary. And there's a whole Lessner house, a whole Lessner coat of arms. Lessner's my maiden name. And there's a Lessner wine cellar that my great-great-great-grandmother was the one that held the keys to it. And it's really cool. I'm not sure if they grew ferment. It's not in the regions that they talk about today. But our vineyards were confiscated in World War II.
Oh.
So, but there's stuff that still exists. And I'm hopefully we'll get to Hungary. I'm thinking of next year. I might go. There's a wine conference out there. In Hungary. The International something. I can't remember.
Oh, my God. Something. Let me know. Let me know. If I'm out of school, let me know.
It's April. It's in April.
Well, maybe spring break.
Oh, it's the beginning of April.
I don't know next year's calendar.
So anyway, but that's totally off.
Totally off topic, but that's okay.
So we came around and we were throwing out different wines. I'm like, can we do ferment?
Absolutely.
You know, I'm so intrigued with it. And I wish I was able to go on the 30th. I was invited to a tasting of Hungarian wines at the Hungarian Embassy in New York, but unfortunately my doggie's having a little operation that day, so there's no one else to take her because I'm the only one here.
I'll be in California. I would love to go to that too.
Oh, it was great. It was I went last year. It was last year, maybe it was the year before. All the years run together as the older I get. And I kind of felt like so honored. And I think it's because of my heritage, and I was just like, it was just a really nice experience, but unfortunately, I can't make it. And being that our wine is ferment, it would have been perfect for us.
Yes.
You know, but unfortunately.
Life goes on. Life.
You know, so.
So do you have
it? Oh, it's going to be November 20th, and I do have the link.
All right.
So
November 20th, that's the third Thursday, third Monday.
This month, November 20th, F is for ferment.
Right before my birthday.
When's your birthday?
The 28th.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's Thanksgiving. That's a Monday, so no, it's not. I was born on Thanksgiving. I was a turkey baby. But yeah. All right. So the link is
if you want to register for next month.
Yep. There it is.
The registration link is up.
And I see Ferriato's website. So that is awesome. Yeah. And, you know, I would like to give a shout out to Gary's Wine here in Wayne, New Jersey for helping me pick this. I always know that I can go in there and find what I need. And if I can't find it, they're pretty darn good at finding it for me. So I would like to thank them for helping me out in this.
It's going to, well, I'll tell where I got my wine in North Jersey. It's Stu Leonard's on 17th.
Oh, you are right by me.
Was I?
Yes. All right. Whatever.
Devils. I was like, I'm going to stop and see, and they had one, and usually I get my wine from a friend of mine in Fishkill, but she didn't have any, so I was like, you know,
right.
And down here in Cape May, slim pickings, couldn't even get a Beaujolais, so surely wasn't going to find something from Mount Etna.
Right. Well, we are wrapping up our A, B, C, D, E, fifth.
Woohoo!
Now I need, what is it, who was Count Choc? No, it's not Count. What is his name? It's not Count Chocula.
No, the Count.
The Count. The Count. There you go. Okay. I need him. You know, A, B, C, D, E. Okay. So we are wrapping up the fifth episode of Wine for Bet Street. I can't believe this has been going on for 5 months. But
I know.
This is
I enjoy it. This is great.
I do too. And I hope that people who are tuning in and listening to the podcast later on or watching our YouTube channels or watching us live are enjoying it and are learning something in a very relaxed, chilled atmosphere.
And I hope you're all having a glass of wine, whether it's from the letter that we're doing or a letter of our past.
There you go. But
and enjoy.
If you'd like to join us with a glass, remember it's Ferment, and it is November 20th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
We'll see you then.
We will see
Thanks
you then.
Thanks for joining.
Thanks for joining. Sláinte.
Thanks for listening to Dracena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions of what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media or at dracenawines@gmail.com. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting program you use. To easily subscribe at iTunes, please go to bit.ly/DracenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/D for Dracena and P for podcast. We would greatly appreciate you leaving a review on your favorite system. It helps others to find us. Let's get social. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, YouTube, Google Plus, and Periscope at Dracena Wines. And I am on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Check out our award-winning wine at DracenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte.